started.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes. I want to thank the listeners on the computer, on their phone, in the chat room for joining us this morning. Today's subject is sarcoidosis. We're going to be having three special guests this morning, hopefully a fourth. We have Debbie DeRay. She's the Executive Director for the Foundation for Sarcoidosis Research. We have Dr. Mark Judson. He's a Professor of Medicine in the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine and the Director of the Sarcoidosis Center at the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston. And lastly but not least, we also have Lynn Short as the Executive Director of the Sarcoid Networking Association. Thank you all for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to tell the audience, if you don't know, sarcoidosis is a potentially fatal inflammatory disease that can appear in almost any organ in the body. A lot of times it affects the lungs and most of the people, but it also can attack your heart, your eyes, your central nervous system, liver, and kidneys. Recently, I was reading an article in the Chicago Tribune about a star that many of you may know is Bernie Mac. And it's my understanding that he may have suffered with sarcoidosis, but that it was in remission. So it not only affects men, but it also affects women. It affects African Americans disproportionately and more severely based on the NIH data. That's the National Institute for Health. But this morning we have several people, several views that we can try to dig deeper and learn more about this. I want to start with Lynn. You were diagnosed with sarcoidosis, yes?
Yes, I was diagnosed, in fact, in August will be 11 years.
Wow. So what happened? I mean, how did you know that you had it? I mean, you started, what kind of symptoms did you have?
Well, my kids always teased me that in my next life I was coming back as a foghorn because I had such a horrific cough. And then I started losing 45 pounds approximately every 6 weeks. Great for your image, but hell on your body. Mm. And they ended up, after so many weeks of testing, they found sarcoidosis in my lungs.
So what kind of tests, do you mind me asking, if you don't feel comfortable, did you go through? Was it a blood test? Was it a lung breathing test?
Because sarcoidosis is there's no test other than actual biopsies. You know, they start looking for other things. They look for tuberculosis. They look for lymphoma. They go through this whole list of things before they finally did a bronchoscopy and came back saying, well, we think it's sarcoidosis. We have to wait for the test to come back from two independent labs. And it did come back as sarcoidosis, and then they put me on 80 milligrams of prednisone, which, of course, took my weight, all that I weight that I lost, plus, you know, and I ended up weighing 300 pounds.
Mm. So I know one of the things that they look for are what they call granulomas, mm-hmm. and they're like lumps that can form in different parts of your body. Do you deal with that, and does the medicine help you handle, the prednisone help you handle that?
Well, the prednisone is a wonderful drug and a horrible drug all at the same time. I also have erythema nodosa, which is rashes from my knees down.
Mm.
And as a secondary, I've got fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue. So sometimes it's hard to visualize in your body which one is giving you the most amount of grief on any particular day.
Right. Now, you mentioned erythema nodosum, and I read here that it's a rash of red or reddish-purple bumps that can appear on your ankles and shins, and the rash may be warm and or tender to the touch. Is that what you were just talking about?
Yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's painful.
Mm-hmm. And now there are creams and things that you can do to help alleviate that, or is it just something that the prednisone has to help you with?
No, I use cortisone creams for that.
Dr. Judson, I'm sure that you're very familiar with Lynn's story dealing with a variety of patients. Is what she's talking about familiar? Could you talk a little bit more about the symptoms that somebody might see and that would cause them to come to a doctor to try to get diagnosed?
Yes, Joy. Actually, the symptoms that Lynn has are unfortunately, or the presentation Lynn has is very typical, which is that patients with sarcoidosis often go a very long time until they're diagnosed. In fact, we did a study of that with 10 other medical centers around the country and found that half the time it takes at least 6 months to make the diagnosis in a patient, and 20% of the time it takes 2 years or longer. And the reason is because, as you've mentioned, sarcoidosis can affect any part of the body, and therefore any symptom the patient has can be a reflection of sarcoidosis. If it's in the eyes, they can get red eyes or painful eyes. If it's in the lungs, they can get shortness of breath or coughing. So the physician is not presented with any specific symptom which points them directly towards sarcoidosis. And often, as in Lynn's case, they don't know what they're dealing with, and they have to go through a bunch of tests until finally a biopsy is done and the diagnosis is made.
Now, reading that also the disease can go into remission, is that something that you deal with, Lynn? I mean, there's some years that are good, some years bad, or is this just constant ebb and flow, a variety of symptoms, Lynn?
I really don't think the disease ever goes into remission. I think it's more like a wave, and sometimes you have a high wave, and sometimes you have a low wave.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are certain times a year that it's more active. I think I have certain triggers that seem to make it worse, but I don't think it ever goes into remission.
I think Debbie got cut off. Hold on a second. Let me see here.
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. I can hear you. Debbie's here. She's here with the foundation, and you also have support groups that you connect people with. Do you want to tell the audience a little bit about that?
Well, sure. I would just echo what both of your other speakers are saying. You know, it is frustrating because the timeline to be diagnosed takes so long, but then once you're finally at the point where someone says to you, you have sarcoidosis, although it's known to those of us in the field, it's a relatively unknown disease to most of the general population, and that sense that you have a disease that no one has heard of gives you that sense that maybe you are alone, and I think support groups allow patients that sense of community, that sense of feeling that other people are experiencing the same kinds of frustrations that they are, the challenges that Lynn mentioned, that the side effects for the medications can often be worse than some of the symptoms they started with, weight gain, a variety of other complications and comorbid conditions, like Lynn mentioned, fibromyalgia. And really being able to talk to someone else, I think, is a very valuable part of the healing process. And support groups are something that we do offer and access to them. And I think it's a program that has a lot of value for patients.
Why don't we tell the audience your web address is
www.stopsarcoidosis.org, www.stopsarcoidosis.org. And you can certainly, patients are welcome to call our office, Monday through Friday. We have a staff in the office that can help put them in touch with patients, support groups as well. And for people who are, to be honest, in all parts of the country, you're not going to find a support group. And sometimes it's important to, as is the case for any disease, you have to be your own best advocate. You need to ask the right questions of your doctors, keep good records. But also at a certain point, if there isn't a support group in your neighborhood, perhaps you say, this is something that maybe I can do on my own.
Mm-hmm.
Or there are also online support groups that can be helpful as well. I think our definition of what community is has changed in a lot of ways, where we used to think of support groups as meaning, going to the hospital or the library once a month and sitting in a circle, where now the internet means you can find a group of people who are awake at 3 o'clock in the morning and willing to talk
on
to you
internet.
About your heart involvement.
Well, Lynn, why don't you tell the audience, Lynn is the executive director of the Sarcoid Networking Association. Why don't you give the audience your web address also?
It's www.sarcoidosisnetworking.org. We've been in existence for 17 years.
And do you have a phone number people can call, Lynn, if they are interested in reaching out to you?
Sure. It's 253-826-7737.
Debbie, also, why don't you give your phone number out for people to call the office in Chicago?
Sure. We are in Chicago, but patients are welcome to call and request free information anywhere in the country, and really we do ship internationally as well. That number is toll-free 866-358-5477, and again, it's usually best to call during the day, Monday through Friday, but certainly we have an information line where you can leave a message at any time.
Dr. Judson, I just want to bring you into the conversation. Is this a genetic disease? Is this something I get? I was reading in reference to, like, certain people are predisposed, or healthcare workers, school teachers, firefighters. Could you give us a little background of who might get sarcoidosis?
Well, we think, Troy, that there's a genetic component, but it's not a strict genetic disease, which means that people with certain genes are probably potentially predisposed, but that won't predict if they'll get it or not. And you hit upon some groups which are prone to get it. Firefighters seem to be prone to get it. Some healthcare workers, people who work with hairdressing may be more prone to get it, but it's not like they're destined to get it. They just have an increased statistical risk.
Now, why is that? I was reading an article about people who worked in 9/11 workers in cleanup, and the dust possibly triggered sarcoidosis in some of those workers. Have you heard of something like that before? That was in a New York Times article.
Right, exactly. That was published in the medical literature. Basically, all these risks are, but what we think what's going on with all of them is that people are genetically predisposed, and if they're exposed to something with their own genetic risk, it prompts them to develop sarcoidosis. So there probably, in my opinion, are maybe hundreds of causes, and it depends what your genetic makeup is to determine what potential cause will lead to the disease.
Now, I was reading that it seems that more women get it than men. Is that something to do with hormones in women? Is there some kind of explanation for that?
There's no known explanation. It is true that women are more likely to get it. It is true that in the United States, African Americans, as you said, are more likely to get it and are more likely to have more severe disease. But why these things are is not presently known.
Now, there are different types of sarcoidosis. Yes, Dr. Judson, could you speak to about the different varieties? I mean, Lynn was talking about her skin. She has problems with her heart. If there's Lofgren syndrome, is that something that you're familiar with?
Right.
Yeah, I had Lofgren's.
You have that also,
right.
Lynn?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, sarcoidosis can affect every part of the body. The most common organ that is affected is the lungs, but the skin and eye are other two very common organs.
Mm-hmm.
The liver can be involved, the heart, the brain, the bone, any part of the body. Lofgren syndrome is a specific type of sarcoidosis where the patient gets exquisitely painful lesions that you already talked about, erythema nodosum. They're very, very painful, usually on the shins. It can be anywhere in the body, but usually on the shins. And it's associated with a certain X-ray finding and often fever as well. And that's what's called Lofgren's syndrome, was described by a Swedish man named Lofgren almost 100 years ago.
Now, Debbie, you also not just deal with patients or people who are suffering from sarcoidosis, but the foundation also reaches out to professionals like Dr. Judson in terms of grants that you have. Could you speak a little bit about your professional services that you offer?
Sure. I think, you know, as that question that you asked Dr. Judson elicited, it's complicated when you have a multi-system disease. How do you go about approaching research in something that affects any organ system in the body? And I think you can do that in a couple of ways. One, looking at what we would say basic science, laboratory-type science, looking at why does the immune system cause inflammation to happen in people with this genetic predisposition? Is there a way for us to determine which genes might be involved? Is there a way to determine why different parts of the immune system are acting the way they do? And if we can figure out those things, would the genes tell us which people are, like Lynn, going to have chronic progressive disease and which people might have a form that does eventually, you know, the symptoms go away and into a kind of remission. So I think those
Debbie, I'm sorry. I just want to stop.
Sure.
We have a caller here. I think they might have a question. Hold on. Good morning.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Good morning. Did you have a question?
Yeah, my name is Richard. I'm calling from Massachusetts. And
thank
I'm wondering.
Thank you, Richard, for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm wondering, has anybody ever looked into the possibility of being influenced by heavy metal? In other words,
Dr.
mercury,
Judson,
lead, manganese?
Yes. Well, it turns out that there is a disease called chronic beryllium disease that is caused by the metal beryllium. And it acts extremely similarly to sarcoidosis. In fact, it used to be thought that patients with chronic beryllium disease had sarcoidosis until it was finally realized that some of these patients who were diagnosed with sarcoidosis actually had a disease from the metal beryllium. It's my personal opinion that many other cases of what we're now calling sarcoidosis really are the result of exposures to other metals. So what I'm trying to say is that I think we are misdiagnosing or some cases, or in other words, some cases of sarcoidosis are due to metals. That's just my own personal opinion, though.
Well, actually, it's my opinion also, and I have looked at beryllium, and that's used in the nuclear industry. It's also used to harden aluminum. It's an abundant element in wheelchairs and things like that. But if I might suggest, you take a closer look at manganese and mercury and lead.
Thank you very much, caller, for calling in this morning.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Well, so that's interesting. Debbie, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think, you know, the caller, again, brings to mind some of the complications and why we have to approach sarcoidosis differently than we might some other illnesses. And I think we benefit from having doctors who are expert in a range of different conditions involved in the discussion about what causes sarcoidosis. I know that, you know, Dr. Judson is probably not alone in saying that there are causes that can be attributed to metal. Certainly, beryllium is one that's been identified.
So now how would it... Go ahead. Sorry, Lynn. Go ahead.
We had an email from a flight crew this week. They're the people that spray on the de-icer. And they wanted to know that several people in their group had gotten sarcoidosis, and they wanted to know if the stuff that's sprayed on the planes was contributing to sarcoidosis.
Wow. Have you heard of something like that, Dr. Judson?
No, I haven't. But all these, I have a very large sarcoidosis clinic, and a lot of the patients can think of potential causes in their case. And all are plausible. We don't know enough about the immune system to know how potential exposures interact with the immune system to figure out if these are really the cause or not. But it's important to notify physicians about these sort of associations if there are groups of people who seem to be getting sarcoidosis, because these sort of groups should be investigated.
Debbie, why don't you tell the audience, in February, you guys do a special activity related to sarcoidosis. Can you talk about that event a little bit, the KISS?
We do. It's KISS, Kick In to Stop Sarcoidosis. Sarcoidosis is quite a mouthful, but KISS is an easy acronym and a campaign that we've developed to raise awareness for sarcoidosis and also funds to support research. Generally, we have a big event in February in Chicago, but then around the country there are other events that take place during that week as well. And we find that that's been successful in bringing awareness both locally and nationally. I know in some years we've been able to, because of the individuals associated with that campaign, be on the Today Show and things of that nature. Bill Russell, who's a basketball player that many people would remember from some time ago, who played for the Boston Celtics, and I think is without peer as a basketball great goes, was diagnosed with sarcoidosis after a similar story to what Dr. Judson talked about, many years of misinformation and misdiagnosis, was able to determine after a visit to the Mayo Clinic that he had sarcoidosis, and he participates in that campaign as well. And it is, again, an opportunity to raise awareness of the disease and let patients who are out there who may not have access to information and support that we exist and that they can certainly come to us for free information.
I just want to tell the web address again. It's www.stopsarcoidosis.org, and that's for the Foundation for Sarcoidosis Research. And then, Lynn, also just tell your web address again.
Oh, it's www.sarcoidosisnetwork.org. We also have a newsletter that people can subscribe to.
And what other services do you have, Lynn, with your organization there? You said people can call in and speak with you in terms of networking, connecting. On your website, you have an abundant list of different resources across the country. What are some of the, you said you have a newsletter. How often does your newsletter come out?
It goes out 4 times a year, and I've just got a new newsletter editor, thank God. And we have the website. We have the National Register, which you can go online. There's a link from our website, and it's a questionnaire that people fill out. It's about 9 pages long that researchers can come to us and get copies of it. Nobody's name is given out. We are HIPAA-protected, and it helps researchers. So we'd like people to fill that out. We do support groups. We do annual medical conferences where people.
And you have a picnic coming up, you said. You have a picnic coming up.
Yep, this afternoon at our house from 1 to 4 o'clock.
From 1 to 4 o'clock? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dr. Judson, Lynn mentioned she's taking prednisone, and she's using corticosteroids, I believe she said, for her rash. What are some of the other things, Dr. Judson, that are on the horizon in terms of, are there going to be pills that people can take? Are there going to be shots? I mean, what do you see on the horizon in terms of treatment or a possible cure for sarcoidosis? Because right now there is no cure, correct?
Right. Right now, all the medications can put the disease into remission, but will not cure the disease. It'll either get better on its own or it won't. The drugs don't affect the final outcome. But Lynn actually very eloquently described her experience with sarcoidosis, at least what my patients say, at the beginning of this day, which is that it's a great drug and that it's very effective for treating sarcoidosis, but it's a terrible drug because of all the serious side effects that can occur from it. So we really need to develop better medications. And in the last 5 years, there have been major advances and breakthroughs in medications for sarcoidosis, and we're continuing to study more drugs that I think are going to be highly effective. Unfortunately, at this point, a lot of these drugs are prohibitively expensive. They're very, very expensive bioengineered compounds. But I'm hopeful that over the next 5 or 10 years, the cost will be driven down above the even better therapies. But we have made significant advances in the therapy of sarcoidosis.
Debbie, is there a way for you to connect people who are interested in going into clinical trials of these new medicines?
Well, absolutely. The best way is to, if you're on our website, thestopsarcoidosis.org, there's a link for research, and you can follow the open list of clinical trials. You can also at any time access a site that's clinicaltrials.gov, just clinicaltrials.gov. And if you search the word sarcoidosis, that's a government database that lists all currently recruiting trials in sarcoidosis. Unfortunately, as positive as we'd like to be that there are new things on the horizon, there aren't that many drugs that are in clinical trial right now. I think there are a few investigator-initiated trials, which means perhaps one doctor at one medical center is doing a small study with a particular medication. But certainly there are lots of opportunities for patients to participate in research. One project that we're working on right now that we're very interested in is raising awareness of this concept of tissue banking. There's a group, National Disease Research Interchange. You could find the information on our website if you look on the donate. If you sort of click the donate buttons, you'd get to donate organs and tissue. And I think, the ways that you can stimulate research, some of them are by, giving money to people or talking to young investigators about pursuing interest in the field. But for people doing basic science research who may need access to tissue, whether it's lung tissue or skin tissue, you can understand with sarcoidosis maybe different sorts of tissues that people would want to have. But people would register to donate their organs in advance of anything, catastrophic happening. Or if they were going in for something as serious as a lung transplant, that any discarded surgical tissue would be something that could be collected and disseminated to researchers around the world who had an interest in seeing this. So participating in clinical trials is certainly one very good way for patients to be involved, but there are many others. Even something as simple as participating in online discussions, you know, you're able there to see, at least from our perspective, where conversations are going. Are there trends and what people are seeing? And we notice those seasonal kinds of things that Lynn talked about as well, because we'll notice that there are more patients requesting information during certain months of the year, which
Would it be like summer, or is it spring, winter? What times of the year do you see increase of calls?
We have less calls in the summertime.
Less calls in the summertime. Because I know sometimes people with the disease of multiple sclerosis, the heat sometimes can affect them, whereas people with lupus, which is also another autoimmune, the heat doesn't affect them. So these diseases, you know, I guess everybody is individual. So where would you see the most calls, in the spring or in the winter?
Winter, correct.
Winter. Debbie, you were going to say something?
You know, and I've said that, and of course I don't have the numbers right in front of me, and I apologize. I defer to Dr. Judson on when they have a sense of when seasonal changes happen, and it may be distributed differently in different parts of the country, but they certainly have a big population down there that he has a better sense of.
Well, I would just say this. It's been well shown that new diagnoses of sarcoidosis are more common in the very early spring. For whatever that's worth. But I just wanted to add to something that Debbie said in regard of the importance of both these patient groups, is that these patient groups I look at as a physician who's interested in sarcoidosis, I look at them as a link between patients with sarcoidosis and physicians / researchers in sarcoidosis. For example, someone called today or sent an email about he notices a lot of people with de-iced planes who got sarcoidosis. Well, that's something that I think researchers in sarcoidosis need to know about, because there may be some important information into the cause of sarcoidosis if one explored those people.
Right.
Now, the person who sent in that email doesn't know who to contact. He doesn't know which sarcoidosis researchers are involved with this. This is
right.
Where Debbie's group and Lynn's group can act as a link for that person. That person can call in, and these patient organizations know who the researchers are, and they can link the patient to the researchers.
Right. We have about 2 minutes left, and that's very important. I think that's part of the reason I have these shows, because there's so many things in the world. You can't know everything. And in terms of sarcoidosis or lupus or multiple sclerosis, there's so many things in the world that people may be suffering with, and they don't know where to go. So, again, for people interested in reaching out, you can check out the Foundation for Sarcoidosis Research's website, www.stopsarcoidosis.org. And for Lynn Short's organization, www.sarcoidosisnetwork.org. Correct, Lynn?
Yes.
I want to thank all of you for coming out this morning, taking the time out of your Saturday mornings for joining us. Again, this is a very important discussion. I'm sure we can have another show in a couple months or a year from now, because new people will be being diagnosed, and the people who have it need to learn how to manage it. I want to again thank Dr. Mark Judson for coming out, Debbie Duray from the Foundation for Sarcoidosis Research, and Lynn Short. She's from the Sarcoid Networking Association. Thank you all for coming out this morning.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Thank you so much. I want to thank the listeners for joining me this morning. And please make sure you mark the show a favorite. If you have any questions or suggestions for me, you can email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. And join me next Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. We're going to be talking about childhood obesity. And that's a huge epidemic. Lots of children are developing diabetes from obesity. Gym programs, health programs are being cut, unfortunately, at schools. People's diet, eating fast food. It's so many things that are happening. We're going to be having two great doctors, Dr. Apovian and Dr. Arthlanian, talking about childhood obesity again next week at 11 a.m. Eastern here at Blog Talk Radio. Again, thank you, everyone, for coming out. And everyone have a beautiful Saturday, and check out www.stopsarcoidosis.org or www.sarcoidosisnetwork.org. Thank you very much for joining me this morning.